everyone. SchoolOwnerTalk.com. Dwayne Brummett here with Allie Alberigo. Allie, this is our third call on basically headaches and heartaches for school owners. But before we get into that, I'm sure you're doing well.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for asking. But, yeah, things are always pretty good. And even if they weren't, I would always say they were because, you know, that old saying is, you know, you got to fake it till you make it, right? Or, you know, you create your own destiny. So I believe positive energy out, positive energy in.
Well, I like what Zig Ziglar says. He says it's just telling the truth in advance. I mean, you don't always want to be in a bad mood, right? So.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. My daughter, it's funny. When she was a baby, probably 3 or 4 years old, I'd always say to her things like, you know, well, she'd be crabby or she was in a bad mood. And I'd say, you have two choices. And I'd hold up my fingers. I go, you could either be in a good mood or a bad mood. Which one do you choose? And she'd get frustrated and she'd pull up my third finger and she said, an angry mood. I'd roll it back down and I'd say, no, you only have two choices. And then, of course, she'd always inevitably pick the good mood. But some people, I think, would like to be in the bad mood. You know, and, you know, there's some people that just exist on negativity. They enjoy that. And speaking of that, I mean, have you ever had some people in your school, a parent or, you know, a group of parents or, you know, a student that was just that negative Nelly, you know, that all they did, everything that you say, you know, was sunny, they said it was rainy, you know, like what do you do in a situation like that?
Yeah, I've had a few students like that. And I've had a few parents like that. I'll give you a student example and also give you a parent example. Student example is this young lady would always come to me with these problems, and I would give her the solution. And, you know, the quickest way to stop a complainer is to give them a solution to the problem, so therefore they have nothing to complain about. And so that's what I would do is I would give her a solution. Well, finally, she would do nothing with it. And she came back one time, and I finally just said to her, look, you know, I've given you the solution to your problem. Please don't come to me anymore until you have acted upon that solution. And that actually took care of it with her. She didn't quit. She didn't leave, anything like that. And I think she respected the fact that, you know, I identified what the problem was. I gave her what I thought the solution would be. And then I was like, hey, I can't help you until you're ready to help yourself.
Right. Now,
go ahead.
Well, no, I was going to say, now, do you ever have, of course you have, I know this because being a school owner, I know all of us have the same thing. Have you ever had those people that just don't get it? Like, you know, we scratch our heads and we're like, what the heck? Are they even listening to what I have to say?
Yeah, I've had to let some parents go. And that obviously meant that the kid had to go too. And it's been disheartening. I remember the very first time I had to do it. And it's really, really weird, but it was, and I don't mean, this probably sounds bad, it was so empowering after that. And I don't mean in a bad way, like I went around and fired all my clients, but there was just some realism behind it when I finally said it to her. And I just told her, I said, you know, Mrs. Jones, and that's not her real name.
Right.
But I just said, you know, Mrs. Jones, I can't service you anymore.
Right.
And she just kind of looked at me like, what do you mean? I said, I can't service you anymore. I said, you and your children are going to have to leave.
Yeah.
Her jaw dropped, you know. And now, think about this for a second. She was able to push me around quite a while, and I allowed it to happen. So for me to actually, you know, finally say it, and I probably was 26 years old, 27 maybe, you know, and I finally said it, her jaw dropped.
Yeah.
And she angrily stormed out of my office and took her kids and never came back.
Right.
So, and she's not the only one that I've had to let go, but she was my first. And after that, it was easier. It's never easy, but it was sure a lot easier. And when I did that, everybody else straightened up.
Right. You know, it's
interesting. You know, and it kind of reminds me of what Dan Kennedy says, you know, he's and I don't agree with this totally, but he goes, every 3 months, you need to go around and fire somebody just to keep everybody else on their toes. I don't agree with that, but I get what he's saying.
Yeah, that's the old Sun Tzu mentality, right? You know, you take the strongest leader that's giving you a little bit of resistance and you cut off their head so that everyone else falls into line. You know, it's basically the art of war, technically, in the old Japanese and Chinese tradition of negotiation in a way. You know,
I've had to let instructors go. I mean, I always hated to have to do that, but you know how I did it, and this is how I run my school is, you know, your performance, your hours are going to be based upon your performance. So if you're the better instructor you are, the more hours you are going to get. Now, obviously, there's a limited amount of hours in a week that I can, you know, employ somebody, but the ones that get the most hours are the ones that are doing the better job. And, you know, I was told, and I still tell my employees, that if you start to lose your hours, it is, you see your hours start to drop, it's your responsibility to come to me and find out what's going on.
Right.
Because then that tells me that you are interested in correcting the problem.
Right.
I can come up to you and say that this is a problem, but that's going to be offensive to you. Until you're ready to actually admit that there might be a problem, I'm not going to be able to help you. I'm just going to be trying to force things down you. So
right.
I've brought employees all the way down to 2 hours a week before before they've actually gone and say, you know what, I'm no longer going to work here.
Yeah.
And then they leave.
You know, it's interesting, though. I wanted to bring back and, rewind slightly to what one of the statements you said, which is a term that a lot of people are afraid of or have heard but don't do. And you said, yeah, I've fired some students. I've fired, you know, some parents. And you know, sadly, that, you know, that's basically what we're doing. And I can give you an example. And here's the thing for all the students and teachers that are, you know, the teachers that are listening out there, the school owners. By nature, we're martial art teachers, so we're nurturing. You know, we take a kid who's uncoordinated and we teach until eventually he has coordination. Or we take an adult that's out of shape and we slowly baby step and nurture till they're in shape, or they're weak and their mind is weak and they don't have confidence, or they're you know, they give in to peer pressure and we build their confidence, right? So we're used to nurturing and building these people up. So we tend to want to do that with our employees as well. In fact, I just had a guy, one of my clients, the other day, and he said, yeah, you know, I've given this guy a chance and I'm hoping that he'll come around. I'm like, the sad reality as a business owner, those chances are costing you money. It's almost like you're not only paying them a paycheck, but you're also paying to hope that they'll nurture into a better employee. Now, there's no business owner in the world that I know of other than martial arts school owners and maybe, you know, empathetic teachers of dance studios and so on that would allow this process to go on. For example, Donald Trump would not have someone selling his buildings if they didn't sell. If they were terrible salespeople, he'd fire them, I'm sure. You know, if they were bad construction people and they built weak foundations, he'd eliminate and get rid of them immediately. But why is it that we as owners sometimes allow that to go on? For example, I had a mom in my dojo and her two kids train with me. And no joke, and I'm admitting to this so everyone sees that I've fallen for it. No joke, for like 7 or 8 years, she was nothing but a thorn in my side. I mean, I liked her. She was a sweet person. Kind of, because I find that there was a very vindictive side to her and a two-faced mentality. But there were times where I always felt bad for her and I wanted to help her. And she was always down on her luck, always crying the blues and her kids and the husband and the divorce and the blah, blah, blah. But she was more work when I finally decided after 20 – I mean, I also kicked her out of the school. She came back and I let her back and I kicked her out again and then I let her back. I promise I've changed. You know, I don't know why she kept coming back either, but eventually when I finally made that decision and said, you're out, you cannot come back anymore, and she still tried. She waited a few months and begged her way back, and I said, no, I've held strong. But anyway, when I've realized that my life has been so much better. I mean, no joke, 20% of my stress level just went away with that one person. I swear to God. It was always in the back of my head. She was always causing trouble in my school. In fact, they were on my demo team. When I finally told everyone that she was removed, it was like one of those movies where it started off with like a slow clap, and then the lobby started to get faster. And like everyone was like, they actually stood up. I swear to God, these people were plagued by her as well. And I was hurting myself by trying to help her, hurting the rest of my students by trying to be compassionate. When I got rid of her, when I fired her, my life changed. So that just goes to show it.
Yeah. I had an incident where we had and this was just recent. Every year we do a kickathon for a certain charity in our town. And there was at the kickathon, and I wasn't there. I had my head instructor running it, but it would have happened whether I was there or not. It had nothing to do with him at all. But there was one parent that, you know, had approached a kid of another parent and asked how much money they raised. And they were genuinely asking how much money was raised.
Right.
And let me set the tone here, or set the stage. Prior to that, when that parent had come in, they asked my head instructor, hey, we still have some donations that are on their way over here. My mom's bringing them. Is it okay that, you know, they can be counted into her son's, you know, winnings?
Right, right.
Because we were given out a prize, you know, we were given out a prize for the person that did the most kicks and then the person that raised the most money for the charity.
Yep.
And so anyways, she, you know, had said that to Mr. Bean. Mr. Bean said, yeah, sure, not a problem. And I probably would have said the same thing. I'm almost sure I would have. Well, then, now fast forward, she walks in and she asks this little boy, hey, how much money did you raise? And she found out. Well, she knew that with this money that her mom was going to bring, because her mom had done some fundraising for her grandson, right, that they were going to be pretty close to or maybe just barely beat this kid. Well, they ended up beating this kid by about $15.
Right.
The kid that she had asked. Well, the mother of that other kid that lost had heard all of this, and her perception, which I would have thought the same thing, was, oh, she asked my son how much money he raised, and then she made sure that her grandma or her mom brought in enough money, you know, to so that her son, you know, her grandson would win.
Yeah.
So now you can see what I'm dealing with here, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I, long story short, I had a conversation with both of them. You know, one is not willing to believe that the other one's intentions were not malicious. By the way, the one that won, his brother actually gets services from this nonprofit organization that we helped to raise money for.
Yeah.
So why would she try to, you know, cook the books, so to say, to get her kid to win? So I talked with both of them. Everything's amicable, but here's where the problem lies. All this to tell you this last point.
Yeah.
I get a call that this other lady is in the viewing area that next week talking to other parents.
Right.
About what this other lady did. So I left home and I went straight to the studio and I pulled her into my office and I said, look, what we discussed and everything was done. You
right.
may not think whatever happened, it's done.
Right.
And I can't have you going around telling everybody else in the studio that this person backstabbed you.
Yeah.
Because even if they did, they only did it to you. They didn't do it to everybody else.
Right.
So, and, you know, she had to know where I stood on that, and that's not acceptable. I don't like it. Did I feel bad, you know, that I had to reprimand her?
Yeah.
A little bit, but, you know, we all need scolding every once in a while, right?
Absolutely. Well, you know what, Dwayne, I mean, and it's interesting. I bet you that everyone who's listening, if they've had the school for any period of time, every Thursday, I've said this before, I go out to my good buddy John Oschlauer of the Nakata School of Self-Defense, and we have breakfast. We've been doing this for like 20-plus years. And, you know, we miss here and there, but pretty much steady every Thursday for 20-plus years. We start off our conversation by like, I can't believe Mr. and Mrs. Smith did this, you know? And, oh, by the way, I got a story for you. And it's the same thing every week. We kind of vent for 15 minutes. And then we move on to cool stuff like movies and TV shows and what's the next cool project that he's going to do and so on. But it always starts off with a scenario. And we've been rehashing the same scenarios for 20-some-odd years of what people do. However, I do wish I could have gone back and noted and journaled everything, because the way we've evolved as humans, as instructors, as, you know, martial art teachers and owners has changed. Because what used to take us 5 or 6 months to get over now takes us less. Like, for example, I had a student who did something really ridiculous not too long ago. They ended up quitting my school after I'd given them a deal, and then they couldn't afford, and I gave them tuition break. It was her and her son. Both of them were going to train with me. They're black belts with me, actually, and they couldn't afford it any longer. So I said, I'll give you my black belt club, which is like $160 a month, for $130, and you only got to pay for one person, not two. So they're paying $130 for two people in my black belt club because they've been with me forever, and I felt I owed them a debt of, gratitude. Lo and behold, she couldn't afford that fee. So she ended up saying, okay, I can't afford it. So I said, oh, no worry. Train as long as you can until you can afford it. She never trained. What I found out recently is she's training at another school. And I'm going like, wow, after all that I did. But however, that would have bothered me for months and months and months. 2 days it took me to get over it, and I'm done with it. That's how I've trained my brain and my heart to accept things like this. And I don't internalize things anymore. And I do like what the monks say, let it go, so that I could focus on the positive stuff for the positive people. And that's an important lesson, right? I mean, we have to not let these negative Nellies ruin our school, whether it be an instructor, a bad instructor, a disgruntled employee, or a bad parent. And we got to let them go because the other people don't want to be around that. That can literally destroy your school. And I've had that before. Right? I've had negative people like that woman that I got rid of, not the one where she was on the demo team, where I probably lost more people over the years because of her than I ever, got from her. So, I mean, I kept her around, and I lost people just because I was trying to help her. I could have probably helped 10 times more people by getting rid of her. So that's the lesson,
Well, I like what Professor Keith Havner says. He says, we got to be immune to criticism.
Right.
I mean, we need to look at what people are saying, see if we had a part in it, correct whatever part, that we need to correct. But other than that, you need to be immune to criticism.
Right. However, Maybe we should kind of adapt that statement a little because the reason why I say that, Dwayne, is because you and I could be immune to criticism because we've gotten to a level maybe potentially in our business that we're still open-minded to hear what goes on, but I want the new school owners to understand that if something is – let's say 20 people are complaining about the same thing or 10 people or even 5 – you better believe, because what's that saying, if you get one complaint, 8 other people are not saying something, but they feel the same way. So if you're getting a group of people that are unhappy with a specific system or a method or a, product, take note of it, and don't necessarily be immune to it. However, don't let the haters, control your life, right?
Well, when I say immune to it, I just mean don't take offense to it. I mean, fix whatever you can fix. I'll give you a perfect thing. Last Friday, I met with one of my instructors, and he said, hey, I just wanted to let you know that there was a student that confided in me about, he feels that the emails that you send out,
right,
basically you're spamming us.
Right.
And I said, really? And he goes, yeah. He goes, and I said, well, I only sent five a week, one each day,
right,
each weekday. And he said, yeah, but he still feels like that's spam. He said, is there any way that and it's not that your blog posts aren't interesting. He goes, I don't even read them all the time. He goes, I'll see one headline every once in a while that I like, and I'll read it. And I said, well, that's why I send them, because the headline that interests you, you're going to click on. He said, what if you just have, an opt-in where if people want to get that daily thing that they can opt in? And you know what? I know that, but I never did it. I was spamming everybody. and I didn't take offense to that. I was like, okay, duh, Dwayne, you should know this, and now I'm going to change it.
Well, you know what, though? It's interesting because I also, as you know, I run this big, huge tournament circuit, right? And it's a massive tournament circuit, and I send out tons of emails before each event. So one of the other people, one of the instructors said, my people are getting very upset that they're getting so many emails. And I basically said, I haven't sent out that many. I sent out, like, maybe 8 emails over the course of, like, 6 weeks. So it's maybe like one a week almost, maybe 2 in 1 week. But right, but then I said, well, they have the option of just hitting delete and not reading the email. However, if they opt out of the list, they'll never receive anything from us. So it's kind of funny. And I really, really dislike, let's not say hate, but I dislike, I'm leaning more towards hate, when people say, I was talking with a bunch of the parents and we feel, or, I was talking to a bunch of the parents and we think, and I'm like, you know what? I never allow people – it's like a judge will never take hearsay. So I say, tell me what you feel. Don't ever tell me what other people are saying, because I don't believe that. I want to know just what you feel. Your opinion is just as valuable to me as 20 others, but I want to know it from your side. I didn't want you to have to build up strength by gathering a mutiny with all other people and trying to find people that are like-minded before you presented me with your issues. Just come to me. And that's the kind of relationship we've got to nurture within our schools, where people are, feel comfortable enough to tell you how they feel. Sometimes those people, though, they're like mutiny. You know, they'll go around and, hey, what do you think about the way Shion does charges for his blah, blah, blah? Or, you know, do you really want to do Black Belt Club? Are you forced to go to his tournament? Like, and then, of course, someone else will agree with that person. In fact, the one lady that I got rid of, she was perfect for that. She'd try to get people. And I'd then go and approach Mrs. Jones and go, why didn't you come to me? She said, listen, Shion, I don't really feel that way. I was just yesing her because I can't stand the woman. I just wanted to get her to leave me alone. I'm no joke, and you know, but so certain people create this kind of negativity. So for school owners out there, be careful. Listen to everything. Correct as much as you can. But like Dwayne said, don't let those criticisms or those negative comments color how you think, because it could be wearing.
Yeah. And I think it's important. I don't know if you have any guidelines for yourself with regards to – I'm sure you do. You know, number one, with your students, when you're going to be finally done with them and fire them, with your employees, when are you finally going to be done with them and fire them? And then also your parents, when are you going to be finally done and fire them? but like with our students, we have a 3-strike and you're out policy. And so, you know, if Johnny is messing up in class, being disruptive, whatever, we say, you know, Johnny, that's one.
Right.
And he understands what we're talking about. Well, if we get to 3, then Johnny has to sit out that day, whatever's left, and then we're going to have a quick meeting with Johnny and his mom and say, hey, you know, Johnny was disruptive, this is what's going on, and we can't have this anymore. And then we get his time card, and I take a hole punch, and I punch a hole in his time card.
Right.
That's strike one. If we got to get to 3 holes, well, we don't ever get to 3 holes, because that's the second one. If we have another third meeting, he's done. But he's already been told that, and so his mom. The same thing applies to my employees. Is, you know, I have one employee right now that's on strike one. The strike one was because he showed up late.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that was a verbal. He got a verbal warning.
Right.
He understands. If he goes to strike two, it's a written warning, and then if he goes to strike three, he's fired, and he already knows that. But he's been on strike one probably for a year and a half now, and he has not been late since.
Okay.
And then with your parents, you need to have the same thing. You need to have a strike one, strike two, and then there is no strike three. I mean, strike three is, hey, we already talked 2 other times. You're out of here.
Right, right. I had a mom, and it was amazing. And I don't know why people are like this for some reason. I think maybe certain A personalities, you know, will clash, right? So she was like an A alpha woman, and I was the alpha of my dojo. And she would literally sit in my hallway. Like, my hallway of my East ISIP location was, you know, it's a 4-foot-wide hallway where they travel down to get to the classroom. She would sit in the hallway with her legs spread out so that everyone would have to step over her. She wouldn't even move her legs. And I don't know why. Like, what would create a person to do this? You know, like, I'd always look at her and go, like, why are you doing this? Like, there's a chair over there. Well, I'm comfortable. She'd look at me with a smirk on her face. I said, I don't want you sitting like that. And she did that once. I told her, and she got up. She did it again. I told her, she got up. The third time, I said, this is the last time. And she kind of laughed and smirked at me. I walked in the office, had them pull her contract. I photocopied the contract, tore it up in pieces, put it in an envelope, and handed it to her. I said, here you go. You just won the prize of the day. And she's, like, really sarcastic, like, oh, yeah? And I'm like, yeah, you're out of the school. I said to the guy teaching, I said, go and get the – there was 3 children. I mean, massive money I just lost because of it. And I said, go get the 3 children, bring them out of class. Unfortunately, you're no longer allowed in my school. And she was just a nasty woman, you know. And there was no need for it. And everybody, again, was happy that I did it. They all felt uncomfortable stepping over it. And why would you do that, you know? So you gotta understand that same way. Hey, listen, I don't know how much time we have left, Dwayne, but what about staff? Like, you know, we all have staff. Some are paid employees, some aren't. I know you just gave us an idea about how you dwindle down their hours if they're not doing things right. But what do you do when you get staff members that maybe are talking negatively behind your back, or they're not working at the optimum level? Rather than just cutting their hours back, you know, we could always just say you're fired like Donald Trump. But what are some of the skills you use to kind of create a better work team or team environment and so on?
Yeah, well, I have kind of some cross-checking, if you will, and meaning like I have Mr. Bean, who is my head instructor. He's over everybody else. But then what I kind of do is I put different people in charge of different areas. And so that hopefully, I really believe it empowers them. So like, for instance, I have Mr. Kent, who is one of the things that he's in charge of is he always teaches the white belts. He always teaches, like in my intermediate class, he always teaches the orange belts with a white. Those are brand new into the intermediate class. And then I also have him in charge of my junior black belt class right before they're getting ready for their black belt. So I have him specifically put in certain spots so that I expect certain results from him. I mean, he's got to teach a phenomenal class in order to get somebody to sign up, right?
Right.
So, but another thing that he's in charge of is we have good job cards that all of our students or all of our instructors have to do every night. They have to do one good job card to a student. Well, he's actually in charge of everybody making sure that on a weekly basis, he goes in and makes sure everybody has done their cards that they're supposed to do. If they don't do it, then he gives me the individual, and then I approach the individual. He doesn't, you know, have to do the confrontation part. I take care of that. But, you know, so I've given what I feel everybody has a certain talent in. I try to give them those areas for their own expertise. For instance, you know, if we have, you know, one of our guys might be really good at the commas. And so when we're teaching commas, even though he may not be the senior in the room, we'll have him or her teach it because that's their thing. They're really good at it. And they're probably better than even the senior in the room.
Right.
So I try to match different skills up to those individuals, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, then how about those that, you know, you find that are just not doing their job? Like what? And by the way, I remember you interviewing me. I think it's you and Dion had interviewed me years ago about my book, Business 101. And in it, I write about rules. And I wish I could have had it out and grabbed it and read the chapter. But I talk about business rules. And you guys, I remember the interview you asking me about how I came up with that idea and thought it was a great idea. So this is what I suggest for people. In order to have a company that runs a specific way without having it run one way today and another way tomorrow, and even with deals, like on giving someone a discount and giving this one a different discount and giving that one a special deal, when you look at your overall books and you find out that you're not making the money that you should, it's because you've given all these crazy deals to all sorts of people because we're afraid sometimes to stick to our standards, right? So I have rules for what I do, and my staff follows those rules. Like, step one, if a person does this, and you know, or if they do that, you know, and then knowing where they have strikes, one, two, three, and you're out. Also, we have rules within the school for the business side. You know, like there are no deals as far as price, that, you know, everyone needs to renew before they can train, and yada, yada, yada. So I think that all school owners that are listening out there should have a set of standards and set of rules that they follow so that they can say, well, the rule of the school is this is how we renew. Like, for example, do people get vacation time or not? Like, if they were out sick, do they get that time back? If they go on vacation, do they get that time back? And we've spoken about this in one of our calls. If not, you're always bending your way and trying to appease everyone and keep them happy. But if you have rules, people know the rules. They follow the rules. If they don't follow the rules, they broke the rules themselves. They're not going to ask you to bend the rules, hopefully. And if they do, you could easily say, no, I can't do this for you because I don't do it for everyone else. So whoever's listening, start establishing rules within your business of what you will do and what you won't do and how much you can flex, especially so that your program managers or other employees know where they could go, how far they could bend, what they could do within the guidelines of the rules. Does that make sense?
It certainly does, and I think some of the stuff that we talked about will, if you don't already have rules, will give you a guideline. And I know, you know, you're not pushing sales of your book, but I will tell you, if you want a very, very cheap but very good coach, buy his book, buy Ali's book, because as you go through it, and the problem is, though, right, we read it and then we're like, okay, Yeah, that's good. That's good. That's good. But we never implement it. So, you know, just take it chapter by chapter and then implement what you read in that chapter. Maybe just read one chapter and then implement that chapter before you read the next one.
Yeah, and you know what? And not to sell my book, but again, thank you for saying that. But I set my book up as kind of like a guide for school owners so that they could read something and implement it, similar to how I do my coaching. So my book is not just a bunch of philosophies and thought patterns and saying, oh, well, this might work. No, it literally gives you steps to marketing or steps to making rules within your business. And the book is a very succinct way of doing that. Again, I think that there is a lack of do this and do that in our industry. It's more suggested. And unfortunately, that's the way the martial arts. I hope you do that high block better, you know, but, you know, I want you to, you know, get in shape and eat right. You know, we have to be careful with how we talk to our staff, how we talk to our students and so on. But in my book, I want to give people something that they could actually take out and plug right in. And that's what those rules are for. And that chapter on rules is important because it saves you a world of heartache. You know, it'll save you a world of lost money and frustrations because if you're doing it right, it's going to save you time. So anyway, with that being said, yeah, that would be, in fact, hey, I wonder if I could just maybe take that chapter on rules and copy it and PDF it. Yeah, why don't I do that? And why don't we plug it into our talk and we'll give it out?
I will do that.
An excerpt from the book, right? That would be cool, right?
Yeah, I will put that up there, and then, you know, I know you're not pushing the sales of your book, but I'm going to put a link up there so that they can get your book if they're interested in it. That way they don't have to search for it.
Okay, cool. That's awesome, though. But anyway, so, yeah, guys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, school owners listening out there, I mean, what Dwayne and I are sharing with you here, I need to reiterate there. We've done – this is, I think, our 17th call, Dwayne, somewhere around there?
18th.
What is it?
18th.
It's our 18th call. So we have 18 little nuggets of gold sitting up on this blog waiting, and I honestly believe that there's more information in there than most coaching companies give out for free. It's just for you guys. And if you're a school owner and you adapt my mentality where you share with other school owners to elevate the quality of martial arts around, even if it's within your own community, you know, share our blog and share the nuggets, those gold nuggets for everyone. And, you know, let's do that together. I just posted on my Facebook page this morning because yesterday I was looking at my teacher. His name is O-Sensei Felix Vasquez. He's a hardcore martial artist from Ridgewood, Queens. And, you know, I literally, he was like my dad. I just absolutely love the guy. So I noticed on his Facebook page that he didn't have a really nice defined header. So I basically just spent like 3 hours yesterday and redesigned one for him and basically sent it to him. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is, simply put, that we have to always give back to those that have helped us, and I want to always show what I call giri in the martial arts, which is loyalty. So I basically made this for him and sent it to him this morning, and he sent me an email back saying thank you, and I think that we should always give back, and this is a way of sharing it with other people as well. Make sense?
It totally does. You know, information is great. And this type of platform, we talked about this before, is that we can utilize this. I mean, everybody in the world can get this and benefit from it, which is nice.
Right.
Because,
and share it. Share it with other people. Hit the share button and put it up on, you know, whatever martial art organization group that could benefit. Share it with them so that we could continue to change the industry. Because I still believe, and I know this is going to sound a little bit, you know, corny maybe, but for some of those who understand, you probably will think it's not. It literally is life-changing, the martial arts. And I believe that we have that magic pill, that if people take that pill, that martial art lessons and the things that we teach, it can change the world. It's still that one thing that I believe that still is creating good people and, you know, patient, disciplined, confident, loving, compassionate individuals. No matter what martial arts system we teach, I believe if you're a real good school, your desire is to change people's lives. And if people, all the people out there knew what we did, we couldn't have space on our floors. It's just
right.
That you know, we would have the dojos would be so packed. So it's our job as loyal traditional martial arts or martial artists to get the world to understand this. And if we all band together, man, it would change the industry by massive you know, amounts. So anyway, with that, I'll sign off and be done. But anyway, I think that that's the thing.
Well, and I just want to add that, you know, the martial arts crosses cultures, it crosses religions, it crosses a whole bunch of barriers that, you know, a lot of other things do not. And, you know, that's what makes the martial arts even more different, in my opinion. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
All right. Well, everybody have a great day. And, Allie, thanks a lot. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, me too. You have a great day, too, and we'll talk next time.